Our peers at companies like Facebook and Google are under pressure to become more inclusive. And here in Maryland, almost 20% of the computer scientists are Black. Here in Maryland, you know, we have already begun building a great tech sector that has defined itself by being the place where the world's greatest minds come to solve some of the world's greatest problems like cancer and cybersecurity. And we can absolutely succeed in building a forward-thinking 21st century economy that has room for all of our communities and helps to lift all boats, even as we make it easier for folks to grow their flower shop or their detail shop.
Former NAACP President Ben Jealous is now running for governor of Maryland. I spoke with him just after he announced his candidacy Wednesday outside his cousin's West Baltimore flower shop, which he opened after the 2015 uprising that followed the death of Freddie Gray in Baltimore police custody. That does it for the show. On Friday, we'll have more on President Trump's decision on the Paris Climate Accord. And to see all our coverage on climate change, go to democracynow.org. Also, sign up for our newsletter there. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wells, Laura Gattis-Diener, Sam Malkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Masu, Tarina Nadura. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning. It's 8 o'clock. You're listening to KBOO Portland. June 1st, Thursday, coming right up, Voices from the Edge with Joanne Hardesty. Her guest is James Lee. It's a story of justice, and she'll be taking your calls right here on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to be a founding sponsor of the Waterfront Blues Festival. This year, the festival will be held June 30th through July 4th at Tom McCall Waterfront Park. Festival passes are on sale now, including the Blues Buddy Pass and the Basic 5-Day Pass at early bird prices. More information about the passes, the festival, and more can be found at kboo.fm/WBF2017.
After an investigation of the treatment of prisoners at the Oregon State Penitentiary, the Oregon Department of Corrections agreed to improve conditions. Yet, 1 year later, prisoners with serious mental illness continue to be held in solitary confinement. Join us on Prison Pipeline, June 5th, to hear the Disability Rights Oregon report, Behind the 11th Door, 1 year later. That's Prison Pipeline, June 5th at 6:30 p.m.
My music. You ready?
Oh, yeah.
Good morning, good morning. Welcome to Voices from the Edge. I am your host, Joanne Hardesty. Today, we are going to talk about a story of justice. My guest, James Lear, has a very interesting story to tell, and I'm just going to jump right in. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Move a little bit closer. So, yeah.
Good morning, KBOO.
I am so glad you are here.
Glad to be here.
And for the sake of full disclosure, I will tell people that when you first contacted me, I was like, yeah, whatever. Right? Because I hear a lot of different stories about situations, and I'm not jaded, right? But
right.
I just know that I can't help everybody. But
right.
Sometimes you hear stories that just make you go, what?
Yeah,
that just
that's how
can't
you was.
Be.
Like, what?
Right?
What are you calling me for?
And then you started sending me news articles and other information
right.
that really started rounding out the story that you told me. And for my listeners, I think we've teased them enough. Let's start at where we are now. Right now, you are being asked to pay court costs.
Yes, to the city of our city of Portland
mm-hmm.
and to the Portland Police Bureau, basically.
Right. And how much are you being asked to pay?
$8,000 and $5,000 if I go ahead and do it within a 30-day period.
Mm-hmm.
$25 now and another $25 in 30 days.
So they're going to give you a discount.
Yeah.
Okay, so they want you to pay $8,000 in court costs, but they'll give you a 30% discount if you pay it in the next 30 days.
Right.
In two payments.
If not, it goes back up to $8,000.
If not, it goes back up to
$8,000. And if not at all, there, I guess they send you to collections or something like
uh-huh.
that, they were saying, or garnishment.
Oh.
Yeah. But
so they're threatening garnishment.
I kind of laugh at garnishment because I've been garnished most of my life, you know, back for child support. Oh, I'm scared. You know what I mean?
Right,
yeah,
right.
I've been there.
Okay, so we've told people the end of the story.
Yeah.
Now let's go back to the beginning, the night that you were pulled over?
The beginning is in 2011. In August, there was a hip-hop award show downtown Portland at the Roseland.
Okay.
It was probably already targeted by the police because of the hip-hop show.
Right.
Possibly known gang members, they were saying that were going to be there. Officers searching certain cars as they pulled in.
Mm-hmm.
Mine happened to be one that pulled in. I got out to pay. Noticed he was, flashing his flashlight in my car.
Right.
When I noticed that, I stopped him to, and asked, hey, what's going on?
Right.
He says, gun. So I didn't see all the other officers that he had with him.
Right.
Guns are everywhere. And I then told him, yes, that's my weapon. I have a permit for that in my backpack. And that's also my car.
Right.
Get on the ground. Guns to my head. They put me on the ground. They put me in the car. And, even though he had my permit, he wanted to know, how did I get it? Why do I have to have it? And all
Ooh,
this.
Yeah. Really?
Which made any sense at all.
Right.
And at the time, he didn't have even a reason to arrest me. I probably sat in a car maybe about 45 minutes or so for them to come up with reckless endangerment, I think it was, which is a citation.
Right.
And they write you a ticket and you go.
Right.
When another officer asked me where was my weapon, I told her it was under the seat. She said, sir, are you calling us a liar? I said, no, I just know where it was at.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's why he had to use his flashlight to look from the front of the car. She said, well, it was on your seat. I said, well, you guys put it there.
Mm-hmm.
They went in my car and took it out. The door was open. I was in an El Camino, 79 El Camino, passenger door locked. My door opened because I got out of it to pay the parking attendant.
Right.
So their thing is they're saying that someone could have walked by, grabbed it, and caused reckless endangerment or a problem, which that's a person, that's an action of a person actually committing. If someone was to do that, it wouldn't be on me that he reckless endangered. Probably some other charges could be brought up on me, but not reckless endangerment.
Right.
Yeah. So after that, I went in and they immediately let me go. It seemed like the Justice Center kind of knew, like, what is he doing in here?
So the police took you in.
Oh yeah, they took me in. He told me that he was going to take my gun. He told me he was going to write the state of Oregon,
right,
to say that he didn't think I should have it. See, none of this is being said because I believe that he's not man enough to say those things.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So he said that, and I said, okay, well that's fine. I told him I was going to do some writing. Well, who are you going to write? You'll find out.
Right.
Do your job. We never really argued. We had conversation. Just do your job.
Mm.
I'm just happy he didn't shoot me.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
See, I won because he didn't shoot me. That's normal in our city. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's the normal thing to happen in anywhere else. So I went to jail. They did not want to give me my gun back. I called the district attorney.
Wait a minute. You went to jail.
Yeah, I went to jail. I was in Busted. All right? Busted. My picture in Busted.
Okay.
All my coworkers got to see that.
Whoa. Like, so you went to jail that night.
Yeah, I went to jail that night.
And how long did you stay in jail?
I want to say about an hour or so, the fastest ever, because I think that they noticed, like, he's not supposed to be in here.
Right, right. Especially with what they're charging you with as compared to your documentation.
Right. So it was. It seemed kind of quick. It did. It might have been longer than an hour. I later found out they were trying to tow my car, but a friend of mine got it, and he came back and, got it. The people at the parking lot owner said, no, he didn't do anything. The car can just stay here.
Right,
Some African brothers,
Nice.
Which
good.
Was cool. So, yeah, I went to jail, and later the next day I'm calling about my weapon. The district attorney tells me, I can't remember her name, you know what the officer's saying, right? And I was like, yeah. She says, well, I can't release it, not unless he says it's okay. I said, you're a district attorney. What do you mean? I said, but you know what, ma'am? I apologize for even wasting your time.
Right.
I won't call you again. I got an attorney, and maybe about a couple months after that, maybe I got it right back.
So you had to get an attorney.
I had to do all that. Yeah, I've been fighting this thing for a long time.
And this started in 2011, right?
2011, August 19th.
August 19th, 2011. So, okay, so you were arrested that night. You were released about an hour later. Then you hired a lawyer. You had to fight to get your weapon back.
Yeah.
And then at some point, you decided to file a complaint against the officer.
Yeah, I filed a complaint.
And when did you do that?
August, a couple of months after that.
Okay.
I filed it. I don't remember the exact date. did that. There was a counter offer for me to.
And where did you file the complaint? What was the process that you used? Was that the IPR?
Yeah, I did all that. Yeah,
okay,
IPR.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, lawyer did all that for me.
Okay.
Yeah. After filing all that, they wanted to go ahead and you know just basically just pay me.
Pay you to go away.
To go away.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, no, you know, no apology. I was asking my lawyer, you think they're gonna give me an apology?
Mm-hmm.
He says, no, that probably isn't going to happen.
Mm.
But they're willing to pay court costs, give me a certain amount of money,
mm-hmm.
and I couldn't talk about it.
Right.
And it's done, I mean, basically.
So you filed a complaint, and so meanwhile, the city and the police are negotiating to make the complaint go away, and they offer you a cash settlement that says that—
If I don't try to take them to court.
So if you would just settle.
Just settle, yes.
Take the cash settlement, but then you would be prohibited from actually talking about the settlement and what happened.
Yes.
What you asked was an apology.
Right.
Okay. Want to make sure that we're all on the same page.
Yeah.
All right. So what happened after that? So they make you this offer.
I've appealed it to every court that you could name.
Mm.
You know, I went to circuit court, federal court.
Okay, let's start at the first court you went to. What happened?
The same thing. The judges said that the officer did what he was supposed to do, basically protecting the officer. But also, I shouldn't have went to jail. There was no reckless endangerment.
Right.
It basically shouldn't have never happened.
Right.
But not saying that—
They were at fault.
Right.
Right. Basically, no one was at fault.
No one was at fault.
But how can no one be at fault when you are legally able to have a weapon and you are arrested and placed in jail? Somebody must be. Well, we hear that when people get killed by the police, right?
Nobody was at fault.
Well, but somebody died.
Right.
But in your case, you went to jail.
Right.
And you were going to a concert.
Well,
right?
Well, that's the story behind that is I wasn't actually going to the concert. The guys that I was going to meet were going. We were trying to do a Stop the Violence later on concert in Eugene. So they were meeting artists here in Portland. So I went down there earlier so that they could meet a lot of the guys that performed as ex-Bloods, ex-Crips or whatever. So they met all those guys earlier when I got off of work, and then I went home. So they were enjoying the nice Portland life and forgot they were supposed to go meet those guys. So no one heard their phone. They're performing now.
Right.
So they called me, and I'm like, oh, man, I got to come down there. I know a couple people at the door. Maybe I could see if I can get you guys in. So that I wasn't going to the concert.
Oh, wow.
So this is what happens when I'm, you know, working with my community.
Right.
That's exactly all. That's what I was doing at the time.
And so let's talk a little bit about your background. You and I have spoken, and I know that you had an earlier life.
Yeah.
That wasn't legal, and won't say it wasn't legal. I'll just say that it would in your earlier life you would not have been able to obtain a permit to carry a concealed weapon.
Well,
would that be accurate?
Well, I would have been able to. Anyone's able to get one as long as you're not a felon.
So I
could have gotten one at 21, but not. I didn't know that.
Uh-huh.
At the time, I would say. You know,
okay.
I was a little young in the mind, you know, not knowing.
Thank goodness you didn't have one.
Yeah, right. Not knowing my rights.
Right.
Right. So, I didn't know that at the time. It's probably good that I didn't know that, like you said, because that's certainly something you want to use that for, you know what I mean?
That's right.
Right. So, my earlier life was, you know, out in the street, doing the street thing, gangs and all that, and so later on, me and some brothers that from the opposite side of gang life, we got together and performed. We got a movement called Bro, Brothers Reaching Out, which was Blood and Crip members, not really active, you know. And our goal was try to help brothers coming out of the penitentiary for whatever they went for,
right?
To you know have something home, for them to come home to work to reach out to the kids and help the community,
right?
And we used to go to all the Northeast Precinct meetings, and we done all that. And we used to go to the games, the basketball games. We'd do security for free.
Right.
The city later on told us that we needed background checks on all you guys.
Whoa.
Because they didn't want us doing it because they said because we don't know you guys' record, Well, you do know our record.
Right.
That's why
all
we're
you have
doing
to do
security.
Is pull it, right.
But if anybody looks back at 2011, around that time, there was no shootings at the schools because we were there. Mm-hmm. And then later on, after they stopped us, that young brother was shot up at Jeff, I believe, mm-hmm, outside,
mm-hmm, right,
in front.
Right.
Yeah, but we were up there mainly all the time, wow, at the games, not getting paid, just
right,
doing it.
Well, doing it because you were community-minded and wanted to make,
yeah,
sure that young people had options, right?
Right. And that's a lot of our backgrounds that a lot of people don't know. We, mm-hmm, we grew up in the community with the Black United Front. My
right,
parents was and grandfather was, you know, in the Black United Front.
All right.
I was security for the Black United Front.
Oh,
so, you know,
that's funny. So my first job here was with the Black United Fund of Oregon.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't know Ronnie Herndon or about the Portland Public School protest and all that.
Yeah.
So here I am, new kid on the block, got this new job, and I'd go in to meet with people. Hi, I'm with the Black United Fund. And they would go off on the Black United Front, right?
Yeah, because
oh, man, they, you know, they're against teachers. They're radicals, blah, blah, blah. And it was just, and so I had to start introducing myself. I went to Black United Fund, not the front, but the fund.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, it used to be like that back in the day.
Oh, yes. Yeah. If you're just joining the conversation, I'm talking to James Lee. James Lee is a community member who, though acting lawfully, was arrested. And when he attempted to get justice, and in his mind, and I just have to say, first, I applaud the fact, James, that you didn't just take the money and run, right?
Yeah.
Because the city is accustomed to using our tax dollars to pay people for their silence.
Right.
And the fact that you thought it was much more important for you to get an apology so that this officer would acknowledge that their
wrong
action was,
yeah,
not appropriate.
Right.
It may be lawful, but it was not appropriate.
Right.
And any adult should be able to apologize when they've done something wrong.
Exactly.
So I don't think that was a unrealistic request on your part.
Right.
And I do admire the fact that you opted for the money, but I'm appalled by the fact that they now want you to pay the city's court costs,
right,
because you refused to take their blood money for silence.
Our money.
Our money, right. If you want to join the conversation, give me a call at 503-231-8187. So where are you now? You are now in the process of kind of, they're waiting. This is like a chess game, right?
Well, right now the city attorney, mm-hmm, has been going back and forth with my lawyer, and I actually would like to talk to the mayor myself. So I'm trying to get in there to talk to him myself.
Right.
I know he wasn't the mayor at the time,
right?
But I just want to see how he feels about this situation,
right?
Because it's never going to stop. It's steady happening, and
right,
it could happen to anyone,
right?
And I think we all need to be aware of it, and everyone
right
needs to be legal. I
right
mean, if you could go get your permit, go get one.
Right.
All brothers and sisters or whoever should
right
get one.
Right.
I mean, because that's our right.
Right.
Yeah.
I absolutely agree with that. And
yeah,
so, why don't you just call 503-823?
Do you know how busy he's going to be?
4120 and say, Mayor, I want to talk to you, right?
Well, the lawyer for the attorney lawyer for the city, he mm-hmm says that we have to go through him because I have someone representing me, is what he says. We don't know what he's going right to tell the mayor before I sit down.
Exactly.
Because the only thing he's talking about, well, we offered him $20,000
right
and I don't understand why he don't take it.
Right.
Why didn't he take it?
Right.
But he's not saying the whole story of what happened and the reason why I won't take it.
Right.
That's the point.
Right, right.
He's not going to say that probably.
So I don't know. I would think writing a letter, you directly to the mayor.
I also thought about doing that too.
Right?
Yeah.
And just telling him your story, I think. I know Mayor Wheeler, and I think he's a reasonable person,
yeah,
right? And I think that he would find this as disturbing and incredible as I do.
I didn't.
You left out some.
Yeah, I left out some.
Okay.
I didn't say that. My lawyer filled out a petition for me not to pay the money.
Right.
The judge, I don't remember his name. I don't want to put his name out there
right
like that. But he signed off on it saying I didn't have to pay anything.
Right.
But later on, weeks later, it was
He reversed
it. We don't know why that it was the first time ever my lawyer seen that.
Whoa.
So it's the money is something that it's something that it could go away if they want it to go away.
Right.
But if we want it to stay, it could stay.
Right.
It's one of those things. It ain't a must, and you took our tax dollars and just messed up, you know, $8,000 worth.
Nobody said that it was a frivolous suit, right?
Yeah.
Nobody said that you were using the court for retribution or anything like that, right?
No.
And no one said you did anything illegal in all your actions that night.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that does not pass the smell test.
Yeah, no, it don't.
We're going to go to the phone line. Good morning, James. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning. James, thank you for not accepting that money. Like Joanne said, I think, it's important that people know that there is plenty of misconduct going on, and that even if it wasn't illegal what they did, it was completely irresponsible. So thank you for that, Anna.
Well, thank you for calling. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Appreciate that.
Is that it? I don't normally have short, sweet callers like that.
Oh, yeah.
Short, sweet, to the point. Love that. Again, if you want to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. So a lot of moving pieces in this situation. So after the court hearing, the judge had said that there was no...
In 2014,
the judge decided that that you would not have to pay the court costs.
Exactly, yes.
And so, and this was announced publicly in the court?
Yes, and in writing.
In writing. And you said a couple of weeks later?
Yeah, I want to say a couple of weeks later.
Did you get a letter in the mail, or was your attorney notified?
Yeah, he was notified that it was reversed, and he told me later on, and he said it was the first time ever. He's never seen anything like that before.
I don't even know how that would even be reversed, right? I mean...
I don't know neither. I've never been through anything like this before, so I don't know. I thought once something's stamped, it's stamped. Like once you put your signature on something and agree to pay, you have to pay it.
That's what I thought, too. But apparently it doesn't work that way if you are law enforcement. I'm going to go back to the phone line.
Yeah.
Good morning, James, again. Did we just lose you? I thought you were way too short, sweet for that.
I thought that was pretty funny, too. Now, I was actually going to point out that it was something that you, when you were talking about how it was a bunch of you and ex-gang members who were providing security for the schools and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah, I have some friends on Facebook who are part of, like, New Era Chicago, New Era Baltimore, Detroit, places like that where they still have, you know, still have a pretty sizable black population. A lot of law enforcement is really threatened by that. Like, there's a lot of unity going on within the black communities, and, you know, people need to take notice of that. That, you know, number one, we don't employ enough people who have been released from incarceration, period.
Right.
You know, people, I mean, I grew up with a mom who, you know, she wasn't black, but she had been incarcerated, and it was impossible for her to find a job. Every little thing she could take, she could get.
Right.
And so I think people who don't understand that, number one, should really latch onto that. But number two, realizing that, you know, a lot of these brothers who are out there doing what they're doing, they're fulfilling a very important role. Number one, providing a service to the community, which, you know, a lot of other places normally wouldn't touch. And then number two, it's providing and giving young black and brown kids a chance to see somebody who looks like them fulfilling a role that is responsible. Because a lot of times it feels like, you know, we'll use black and brown folks, but until we can find a white person who can do that role, and then we just kind of erase it.
Right.
Well, and then pay the white person to do it, right? But we expect the people of color to do it for free.
Exactly.
Right?
Like one thing that I saw was a New Era Chicago was doing this Inglewood cleanup. It was like a weekly or biweekly thing where they would have a bunch of the New Era people coming out, and they were cleaning up, and they were carrying the banner, you know, Black National Banner.
Right.
You know? you know, they were cleaning up the hood,
right.
And they were telling, you know, and they were telling people about what, you know, NEC was all about. Well, the cops caught on to it, and they started just arresting people for just, you know, congregating, basically. But then they started putting up a you know, like a white-friendly version of what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And it was like, people need to understand that this, people are threatened by that completely. I mean, especially in these places where they're really trying hard to to gentrify traditionally black areas.
Right.
That is a huge problem.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's happening all over the country. And, of course, we're here in little old Portland, Oregon, and the radical changes are severe.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your call. I'm glad to know that you weren't that short-winded as I thought you were.
Yeah, that was very short.
No, I got plenty of hot air for everybody, so it's all right.
Thank you for your call. You have a great day, okay? Good morning, Mimi. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Thank you. It's a good show today. I wanted to let your guest know, if he doesn't know already, that you can, if you're willing to talk without your lawyer's permission, you can go to the auditor's office at City Hall and sign up for what's called communications for City Council. You only get 3 minutes, but you'd be right in front of the entire council, and it would be on the record your thoughts and your views. So I just wanted to let you know that in case you didn't know that.
I didn't. Thank you.
Very cool. Yeah, you could also call the auditor. I mean, they have at the beginning of every city council meeting, they have like a public testimony process where a couple of people get to come and talk about whatever they want to talk about.
Right. Is that every month or something? Or?
It's every week.
It's every Wednesday.
Every Wednesday. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, they let 5 people on, but the wait list is long.
Yes.
So if you're interested in doing that, call them and just get on the list
for
whenever. It'll be sometime in the summer.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I appreciate that. I'll
cool,
do that.
And good luck to you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate the call.
I didn't know that.
Yes, I did know that, but hadn't thought about that because you want to talk to the mayor. I still say I would
you just write a letter or go down there yourself.
Actually, no, I would do even better than that. I would figure out where he was going to be, and I would be in the audience, and then I would make it a point to introduce myself and tell him briefly your story and say, I need to sit down and talk to you.
Right.
And make sure that he set an appointment. That, you know, that's just me.
But, right. That sounds better.
I do stuff like that. Okay, we got another call on the line. Good morning, Jenny. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. So they admit that there was no law broken by your guest.
Yes.
And then at the same time, they say that the police did the right thing or whatever their training tells them to do.
Right.
Right.
So you have a conflict law.
Right.
So then the judge comes in and reverses the fees and all that stuff for you, and he says there's no legal precedent for this, right? Or he or she?
Right. Yeah. Well, his lawyer said he had never seen anything like that
before.
Never
seen it done, yes.
Okay. Well, it seems to me that there's no precedent and there's no case.
Right. Well,
you have a civil rights case, is what I'm saying. I'm not a lawyer, but I've worked in law for 30 years, and I've done my own cases and been kind of pretty successful, actually. But this is an abomination. I mean, this is due process. You could go to BOLI, B-O-L-I, Bureau of Labor and Industries, public humiliation. You need to take some course of action like that. This is completely wrong under the law. There's no law that says you did anything wrong. There's a conflict of laws with the police, so a judge has to make a decision. He reversed his decision. He has to have some reason for doing that.
Right.
Yeah, he does, and we don't know the reason
yet. Well, lawyer needs to dig into it. That's an abomination, too.
See, I keep asking him, what's going on with this lawyer you got, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, who's the judge? Can you say who the judge is?
I don't remember his name right off of my head, off the top of my head right now.
I'd love to know that name because I've got a lot of them, and some of them are really, really okay, good. And there's a few of them there. I really suspect there's some criminality in that courthouse.
I'm
falling out on a limb here because I've done a lot of cases there on my own.
Right.
Excuse me. I'm sorry.
That's okay. We appreciate your call, and right. I agree
Think
with you.
Bowley.
Okay. I've never heard nothing about
so Bowley is the
public humiliation, defamation. They've done all of that. It's terrible. I'm really sorry this has happened to you.
Yeah, me too.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you.
So the Bureau of Labor and Industry, I don't think they do public safety personnel, right? Because apparently we don't treat law enforcement like we treat the rest of the public. And I just don't know. I think that would be something worth investigating as to whether or not the Bureau of Labor and Industry takes complaints against law enforcement. You know, there is a bill in Salem right now, House Bill 2355, which is a profiling bill that would require police across the state to collect data on people that are stopped and searched and et cetera, by the police.
Right.
The law is on the book now as a voluntary law. City of Portland's been keeping data forever, so we know exactly who they stop and how often they stop them.
Right.
But this particular bill in Salem, that's one piece of what it does. It requires this data collection. But the other thing it does is take felony drug possession charges and reduces them to misdemeanors.
Hmm.
That bill will be heard again in Salem, I hope, sometime before the end of the session. I think you could provide some powerful testimony about why collecting this data is so key to protecting the civil rights of community members.
Exactly.
Who've been impacted by police misconduct.
Right.
And so I will keep you informed if I find out that bill is scheduled again. Right now, and I understand it's in the Ways and Means Committee.
Yeah.
And I know that the Ways and Means Committee will be holding a hearing. I just don't know when it's going to be.
Okay.
Yeah, but I'll keep you informed about that because I think that's key. and for listeners, I just want to let you know what's coming up today on the Boo. At 9 is Press Watch. Teresa Mitchell brings you the news you're not supposed to know. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Eric Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on Between the Covers, screenwriter and author Todd Davies, who created the Arcadia Trilogy of Fairy Tales. Visit KBOO to discuss mythology, technology, and cooking with what you have. Sounds like old school cooking.
Yeah.
Huh? And at 11:30, Black Book Talk visits with author Robert Greer to discuss the latest in his contemporary cowboy series, Astride a Pink Horse. We want to thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support during our spring pledge drive. And if you didn't get a chance to become a member, you still can by going to kboo.fm and clicking on donate. I guess you're kind of in limbo right now, right?
Right.
You've got this 30-day clock ticking away that you have to make a decision. What are you being advised at this point?
There's really none. I'm just speaking with everybody and just putting it out there. I'm not signing anything.
Right. Well, that's good.
Yeah, I'm just gonna fight it all the way. I mean, you know, because it's the principle. Mm-hmm. It's not the money.
Right.
You know, because I could have taken the money.
Right.
And I wouldn't be here.
Right. Right.
But, or I could still be here, you know, if I could be able to tell the story.
Right.
Yeah, I'm just kind of going, you know, back and forth with my lawyer and the city attorney to see what we can come up with.
Right. But 2011, it's 2017. This is 6 years that you have been going through this experience.
They say that things like this against the your city, it takes a while for all of it to get in motion.
Mm-hmm.
And it did, to even get everything going, to even get it to court.
Right.
Yeah, it takes a long time to have it done, I guess.
Talk about
Less time. It was less time because I think it was 2012 when they offered the money.
Uh-huh.
So to take the money is a pretty easy and fast, you know, process.
Yeah. Right.
But
looking for justice, that takes a little longer.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But not as easy as your rights being violated.
Right.
That happens very quickly.
Right. That's right.
So, yeah, that's where we're at with it right now.
And so tell me about, what are you, I know that you're a longshoreman by trade now. What do you do? And I know that you still are working with young men who are transitioning back into the community. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I do. I still, you know, have a couple of friends and from different neighborhoods that mm-hmm. I know. And I talk to them all the time. Not as hard as I used to.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think after that happened to me, and right. it seemed like in the things that we're trying to do with the community,
right.
and them coming after us
right.
as individuals right. in the movement, I think that kind of knocked us down a little bit
mm-hmm.
instead of pushing us up.
Right.
So, I mean, we do what we can. There's some of us still working and doing our own thing. You know, a friend of mine, his name is Mustafa. He's in Eugene. He's mm-hmm. he's still doing his out there. So
nice.
Yeah, and he's an older brother. He's still, you know, working with a lot of people out there, trying right. to get it, you know, make sure that they are transitioning to the right areas. Because mm-hmm. there's a lot of guys that want to come out of the penitentiary,
right.
hit the street, and they want to do better,
right.
And trying to lead their past life. And it's not even just gangs. It's all kinds of things that people go to jail for.
That's right.
Just the main thing for a black man is right. gangs or Mexican or, right. you know,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's gangs right. and drugs.
I was going to say gangs isn't
gangs
illegal.
And drugs,
that's
yeah.
not illegal, right?
No, it's under the Constitution. You could be a gang member.
Right. That's right.
Right?
Right.
It's just what you do by being a gang
that's
member.
Right.
If you do something wrong, then...
Right.
You're in
it's
trouble
the activities.
It's
right.
the activities,
right.
but being a gang member is not against your constitution.
That's right.
Your rights.
Right, right,
yeah.
right. Yeah, there's nothing illegal about gang membership. It's just the activity.
And I think people need to kind of keep in mind that, you know, we go to jail for drugs, gangs, prostitution,
mm-hmm.
and we carry that jacket.
Right.
But when other people go to jail for white collar crimes, meth, and all that, they don't carry that jacket anymore. It's good. They're cleaned up.
Right.
But we still carry that everywhere we go.
Right. Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, no, that's a really good question.
Why is that?
Well, I mean, the difference between now when I was a legislator is when Oregon's Constitution moved from rehabilitation to accountability and retribution.
Okay.
Right? And so we the voters in Oregon got excited about Kevin Mannix as our legislator who was the champion of mandatory minimums.
Right.
And so, and which is why I was saying earlier, you know, we got to fix our political parties because, you know, it didn't matter what the political label was. People were trying to get tough on crime each other, right?
Right,
I mean,
right.
Reagan created it.
Yeah,
I don't
yeah
know if,
you're right.
Don't know if you read Michelle Alexander's book,
oh,
The
well,
New
Jim. She came here a couple years ago. I was in the church over there.
Oh, were
there.
You at the church?
I was amazed.
I organized
like,
that.
Right. Did you?
Yes,
wow.
yes,
wow,
yes.
Wow, that's good. You should bring her back. She's
She's phenomenal. And she's getting better and better and
oh,
better
yeah.
and better.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I found her to be very incredible.
Yes.
I mean, you
yes.
know, and there's more like her, I'm sure, and
yes.
we need that.
Yes,
you know,
yes,
that's what we need. Yeah.
Well, she did a great job of connecting the dots for us. Right?
Right,
because I mean, no new information was in her book,
right?
But she gave us a 50-foot view,
right,
of the intentionality behind how we criminalize black and brown people as compared to the rest of the population. Now, white folks get caught up, but they don't get caught up because they've been targeted. They
right.
get caught up because
we're automatically targeted.
Right?
Yeah,
they just
yeah.
get like, they get caught up and. And so I think her exposure to a lot of people who didn't know, right? Because
yeah.
they just don't see it, right?
Yeah.
They don't see it in their day-to-day life.
Yeah, a lot of people in the church that evening, that were there, they didn't know.
They didn't.
And
they
I
didn't.
Was like, how could you not know? You live in Northeast Portland.
Yes, yes.
You know?
Right.
But to us, back in the day, in the 80s, this is an everyday life for us.
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
Yes. But if all you see is what you see on the evening news, which is black men in handcuffs and the police talking about gang activity and the police, I mean, even today, the police are the ones that decide what looks like gang activity. And did you know what their definition of, oh, you'll love this.
Oh,
you
no,
know what their definition of gang members are today? No, wait, that was old school.
Oh, that's
old school was dependent upon which way they wore the hat, what gang they were in.
Okay.
No, they got a new definition
what is
now.
It now?
The definition is two or more people who self-identify as such.
Huh. They're going to get that all day long.
Now think about, right,
yeah.
any room that you're in, I mean, and I say this when police officers are present or when they're not.
Uh-huh.
Any room I'm in, when I give the definition of gang member as per Portland, as per the Multnomah County Gang Assessment Report, that my listeners can just Google and look up. That's the definition. There are also affiliated definitions, right?
Right.
Gang impacted, because you live in the neighborhood where gang activity may take place. Gang involved, because you may have a family member who's been convicted of activity associated with gang activity. Gang affiliated, because you go to school with people that may or may not be involved in gang activity, right?
Right.
And so the definitions are so wishy, right, that the police can make anybody appear to be a member of a gang.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, ironically, we don't call white kids gang members.
No.
Right? Because if you look at the gang stops, 44% of the stops in the city of Portland are for black males. And so do the math. We have a 6% black population.
I was just about to say that.
Right. In the city of Portland. And if you assume that gang activity happens between 12 and 24, do the math. How many 12 or 24-year-olds are we stopping over and over and over again to get to 44% of the total gang stops?
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
So data already gets collected, and somebody looks at it, but it doesn't change. That data has been consistent for the last decade.
Right.
Right? And so this is what you're up against, right? You're up against a system that just says basically, oh, you're black, so you must have done something wrong. So maybe you didn't do it today, but you did something yesterday, and we just didn't catch you.
And you're thinking about it right now.
Right. And when you leave here, you're going to go do something,
right? You're going to do something. So let's take care of it now.
So let's just do it now. Right.
That's sad, man.
So you and I are joking, but we do have a systemic problem.
Yeah, that's really bad.
And for your information as well, maybe you want to send your lawyer the series that was published earlier this year in the Portland Tribune entitled, the first in the series was entitled The High Cost of Being Black in Multnomah County, that talked about every step of the criminal justice system, from the cop on the street to the judge on the bench. African Americans are treated much more severely every step of the way. So the cop on the street, the charges are more severe, the judge on the bench, the sentence is more severe, and the fines are more severe. Did you know, I got a good one for you, that African Americans are 28 times more likely to be charged and convicted of spitting on the sidewalk?
Really?
Really. So this is data that is available.
Of spitting on the sidewalk?
Of spitting on the sidewalk.
Well,
so think about that, James. So here's what my analysis told me, right? Because I had to sit with that. I couldn't understand, A, I didn't know it was illegal to spit on a sidewalk, right?
Yeah.
But B, I certainly didn't think people were arrested and convicted of spitting on the sidewalk.
I haven't heard of that.
So I've done some analysis since I came across that little jewel. And here's what I figured. Go back to the 44% of the gang stops. And what you know is that if you stop people over and over and over and over and over and over again, and you're not finding weapons, and you're not finding drugs, and you're not finding other illegal activity, at some point you have to have a charge. And voila, we have spitting on a sidewalk.
Right. There we go. Right. Yeah.
Now, however, I was under the false illusion that a DA would laugh a police officer out of his office if they came in saying, I want to prosecute this person for spitting on the sidewalk. I was also under the the judge on the bench would have laughed a DA out of the office if they came into a court when you're prosecuting murderers, rapists, child molesters,
right,
and here you got a DA saying, I want to prosecute this man to the fullest extent of the law for spitting on the sidewalk. Right?
Wow.
I thought the judge would just run him out of the courtroom. Well, apparently that's not so in Multnomah County. In Multnomah County, we are a lot like Ferguson in that we finance our justice system on the backs of black and brown people. Yeah. And so when people tell us we're not Ferguson, oh yeah, we're Ferguson.
Yeah, I believe that.
We're seriously Ferguson, right? And here's what's ironic. Since those reports came out, and they started in February 4th was the first report, and they came out every week for about 4 weeks, not a peep from anybody in elected office about that series of articles. Not a peep.
They didn't say anything.
Ain't heard nothing. Ain't heard nothing from nobody. No.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's the city we live in. So when we talk about progressive Portland and progressive Oregon,
yeah, that's
wake up call.
Wake up call, yeah.
And so if you're just joining the conversation, I know James and I just kicked back like we're in the living room having having a conversation. If you're just joining us, I am talking to James Lee, who is still in the midst of seeking justice from the city of Portland, Portland Police Bureau, around a false arrest back in 2011, August of 2011. And here we are in June of 2017.
Yeah.
And the city wants him to pay the court costs, even though there was nothing, he did nothing illegal, but apparently the city thinks that neither did the police officer who stopped and questioned and arrested him and then tried to charge him with crimes that he had not committed. So
I
think somebody did something wrong, and I don't think it was James. I just want to put that on the record.
Yeah,
I don't think
it
was you.
I don't think it was me either.
No. So we've got about 15 minutes left. If you want to squeak into this conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. And so is your lawyer a civil rights attorney, or what kind of attorney is your lawyer?
No, he's not a civil rights. His name's Ben Hill. You know him? He said he knows you.
The name is familiar. I probably would know him if I saw him.
Yeah, his name is Ben Hill. He knows you.
Hmm. I probably do, because
someone told me to go to the Kafouris, and I went to the Kafouris,
right.
And they're good people.
Right.
The son, I think his name was Jason.
Yeah, Jason's
cool.
Right.
He says, he told me the truth, you know, this is not that big of a case for us to take.
That's right.
But we have someone else for you.
Uh-huh.
And he gave me Ben's name, and me and Ben are really cool. I mean, we've been, you know, basically like, you know, friends now since the incident.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
So that's how I got to meet Ben.
Ah, yes. Yeah, I love the Kafouris because they win really big cases against the police.
Right.
But they're
not liked by the police either.
Well, no, they're not, well, but you know, they're not in business to be liked.
Right.
I mean, thank goodness that they exist.
Right.
My only complaint with them is that they only take easy to win cases because they've got so many opportunities to take. I mean, you know, you can walk in with videotape evidence and
they won't take it.
And they won't take it.
I didn't know
that.
Yeah.
But
well, I think mine wasn't. It wasn't. We'll say 100,000 or better.
Right.
So that's why maybe. I don't know.
They're good lawyers. And again, we need more lawyers that are willing to take on the police, because that's what you find in this city, is that most lawyers, because they want to do work with the city of Portland or with the police bureau or some other governmental entity, are very reluctant to sue police.
Right.
My favorite hippie lawyer, Alan Graf, he and I used to do this program together. When I first moved here, he was the only lawyer willing to sue police officers. And
in the 90s, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Alan Graf was the only one that would be willing to make that happen. So,
oh, wow.
And he's down in Tennessee. But yeah, police don't tend to like people who win lawsuits against them.
Right.
Yeah. But the arrogance is that it's not really against them. They don't have to pay the money.
No,
it's public money.
It's public
money that pays the fines. And no matter how big the fines are, we have police officers. I mean, we got Kroger, the Nazi, who had his service record totally expunged by the last mayor.
Right.
And when it was brought to his attention, his response was, "Oh, I didn't know that was in there."
Right.
Right.
It's
like you're the police commissioner, the mayor, and you didn't read what you were signing. So, I do think that we have, if not corruption, we have incompetence in many of our public offices for people who are just unwilling to take responsibility for what they're responsible for, right? But that's changing, slowly but surely.
I'm hoping that it changes because it needs to, you know?
It certainly does.
It's time.
And your case is just one of those. And quite frankly, this is probably not unusual. What's unusual is for someone to say no to a $20,000 cash payment, just walk away and call it a day.
Right.
That's what's unusual. And I think for me, that's what makes your case so compelling, right? Because who couldn't use an extra $20,000?
I mean, anybody could, but we got to think about, you know, you got to think about your livelihood. You got to think about the respect, the person that you are, you know, and that's, I was raised to stand to be a man in this community, a black man, and stand for my rights.
Right.
But I did do things wrong before.
Yes, yes.
And I had to get back to where I, you know, who I really was raised to be.
Right.
You know, everybody's not raised to be in the street.
Right.
The street is just there.
Right.
And that's where we grew up at.
That's right.
So, you know, that's really why I didn't take the money, you know. And I work every day. And I pay taxes like everybody, in Portland.
Right.
So
have you ever seen that officer that arrested you since that night?
No, he's probably in the, he's in Internal Affairs now, I hear.
Oh,
so I can't call.
Good.
I can't call there.
Oh, good. We should feel much better to know that he is now investigating officers' misconduct.
Right. He's Internal Affairs now.
Give me strength.
No, I've never seen him.
I'm not going to ask for his name on the air, but when we get off the air,
I
want his name. Yes.
Yeah, I will give it to you. Yeah, he just that night, you know, he ran that whole area over there by the Roseland.
Right.
And I asked him, you know, because you have a right to ask for an officer over that officer.
Right.
He told me that I run this. There's no one that could come here that you could talk to. I even said, even the chief of police, him neither. So he was really feeling who he was, you know. So it's bad that I feel like he's where he's at now because.
Well, it's not surprising. I mean, I've seen some horrific promotions happen within the police bureau. And as I was just talking about Kroger, right?
Right. Yeah, just talking
now
about him.
Now he's got a clean service record, right? Unless you've lived here, you would know that is a trainer in Portland Police Bureau, right?
Right?
Unless you have lived here for a period of time.
Right.
The new folks moving in, they have no clue.
They have no clue at all.
And quite frankly, the next police chief won't have a clue because the service record is clean. We have callers on the line. Good morning, Tom. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. I'll be real quick.
Okay.
About a year and a half ago, I had dealings with, I got charged with menacing and had to go to court like five times. And on like the second appearance, the district attorney said that I was not required to appear at the third appearance. But I showed up at the third appearance anyways, and I was sitting in the audience because it was about me anyway.
Right.
And the first thing out of the district attorney's mouth at the third appearance was, "Your Honor, Mr. So-and-so, me, isn't in the courtroom, and I want a bench warrant for his arrest."
Wow.
Ooh.
My attorney stood up and said, "Your Honor, the district attorney said he didn't need to be here, but he is here."
Ooh.
So, I mean, they got all kinds of ways to just mess with you. And honestly, I was not guilty of anything. I was charged with menacing because maybe they didn't understand me or because I work with all guys. I've worked with all guys my whole life. I'm not censored.
Oh, you're one of them.
Well, because I use foul language sometimes.
They misinterpret that.
Yeah, they don't like
violence,
that.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, anyways.
Well, thank you. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, I love you.
That's pretty appalling. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Let's see. We're going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, Kate. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning. So I've been listening to the program this morning, and the question that I have is, what can we do to help support James? Having people stand up who are educated, who are motivated and committed to help hold the community accountable and make it harder for institutions such as the police to just kind of target and survey the black community in Portland is really important. What can the rest of us do to support people like James who are doing the hard work? Can we write letters? Can we...
Yeah, that'll work.
You know, I think that is a brilliant idea, and I would suggest that maybe the letters go to our mayor, Ted Wheeler.
Right.
And I think the letter has two requests. First, that he have a private meeting with James. So that he hears James' story directly from James. That's number one. And number two, that he helped James resolve this issue. It's been going on too long.
Right.
Yeah. Whoa.
Right? I mean, I think those are the two requests. Okay. And yeah, and I think emails, phone calls, after all, right. And I mean, and I would say to Mayor Hales, you didn't create this problem, but you are, in fact, the police commissioner, and you can solve this problem.
Right.
This should not drag on 1 minute longer.
And so is there a way that you guys have a KABU and some method of posting that kind of information?
So yes, I have a Voices from the Edge Facebook page.
Okay.
And as soon as I get a minute, I will post that message. And then you can share it with your friends.
Great.
And that would be great.
And then I'm also on Facebook, too, under my name, James Lee, L-E-A.
Okay.
Yeah, so between the two of us.
Yeah.
Well, and James will post something, and I'll post something, yeah. And you guys can just figure out, you know, what message you want to send. But, you know, I think those are the two core messages that, you know, James deserves a private meeting with the mayor. And number two, he deserves the mayor's support to resolve this as quickly as possible.
Great. Well, we thank you, James, for your hard work in the community. It's needed.
Thank you for calling, and I'm glad to hear that, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your call. Have a good day. Well, that I love that. I love when people say, well, okay, well, what can I do, right? Because right. It does take a community to resolve these issues.
Yeah, and the community needs to be involved at all times, right. For everyone, you know?
Well, I think that we have just gone through a few awakenings in this country, right?
Right.
I mean, a couple of years ago, when Black Lives started, right after Trayvon Martin,
mm-hmm.
It kind of felt like the beginning of the 60s all over again, right?
Yeah.
Where there was this awakening, right? White America
right.
woke up and went, whoa, wait a minute, that's not the country that I think I live in.
Right,
right. So, and then the elections happened, and then there was this other kind of moment where, again, a lot of people were like, wait, that's not,
yeah.
Right, this is not okay. And so there are a lot more people who are motivated
right.
to take action. And what I love is that when people hear these kind of calls of action, a lot of people now are responding to that. So,
oh, that's good, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's a good thing. We're going to go back to the phone games. Not, cut them. Cut. You know, I love you, James, but I'm just not going to go there today, okay?
Yeah.
James has some issues with people who immigrate to this country.
Uh-huh.
I don't think James understands that he's an immigrant to this country, but James and I will have that conversation another day.
Oh, he's called.
Yeah,
okay.
I know him well.
Oh, you know him? Okay, that's good. Yeah.
And so, again, I appreciate.
Excuse me.
You come with so many life lessons, right? You come.
Oh man,
a lot. You show up with just are a walking life lesson.
Right.
Opportunity, right?
Mm-hmm.
But for the grace, you could have ended up incarcerated. You could have ended up, you know, for life, right? You could have been there for a long, 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 long time, right?
Right. Anything could have happened. Right.
Anything can happen, right?
Right.
But today, you are a contributing member of our community, working a union job, building a life, giving back to your community, and seeking justice
right.
as is your right.
Right.
Right. And I just want to appreciate you sharing your story.
Thank you.
Want to apologize for just kind of blowing you off the first time you talked
yeah.
to me.
That's okay.
But again, I think you understand why, especially now that you've seen me in action in places that, you can imagine the kind of calls I get.
You get that all the time.
All the time. All
yes.
the time. But I have never, ever, I can honestly say this, I have never, ever, ever talked to someone who said to me, what I wanted was an apology, right? What they offered was money,
right?
And they couldn't have offered enough money,
right,
for me to negate the necessity for the apology.
For the apology, right.
And so I just want to applaud you for that.
Well, thanks.
Because I don't think there are too many people.
I mean, a few of my friends, I got to tell you, I would have had to think about that yeah.
at least for a little while.
I did.
I thought about it. Cool, cool.
I thought about it, but, you know.
At the end of the day.
At the end of the day. I mean,
you have to live with you.
Right.
Right.
That's where it lies at right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to live with yourself.
Yeah.
And I just think that it just wasn't enough money. If you're going to offer more money or something, if you're not going
right,
to, then I'll, you know.
Right. I mean, at least.
And I'm not saying $20,000 ain't a lot of money. That's not what I'm saying.
Because it is. I'm not saying that. I hear you. No, and it, quite frankly, if you were just looking for, you know, a payday.
Yeah.
Then you would have just taken the money and you would have said, you know, that was just a fluke and it's all good, right?
It's all good,
just going to go on living life the way I should.
Right.
Thank you very much, James Lee.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much, my fabulous engineer, as always.
Yes,
makes us sound
you.
So fabulous. And I'll see you all next week. Same time, same place, same station. Have a fabulous day.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right.
Good morning, it's 8:59 and you're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up at 9 o'clock, Press Watch with Teresa Mitchell brings you the news you're not supposed to know. That's just in a couple of minutes. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. Dennis Bernstein brings us Flashpoints at 10:15. On Between the Covers at 11, screenwriter and author Todd Davies, who created the Arcadia trilogy of fairy tales, visits KBOO to discuss mythology, technology, and cooking with what you have. And 11:30, Black Book Talk visits with author Robert Greer to discuss the latest in his contemporary cowboy series, Astride a Pink Horse. And all of this unique and incredibly enlightening programming is because of the generosity of KBOO members. And if you're not one, join the team. Go to kboo.fm and click on donate. It's 8:59.
Coming to the radio airwaves on Monday, June 5th at 11 p.m. The Ubu Hour Radio Western. Kill faster, pussycat.
I don't care for the way you girls get your thrills. Enough is enough. Now give it back or I'll...
Ugh. Go, Tommy! Get her! Get her, Tommy! Hit her hard!
Adapted from Russ Meyer's 1965 cult film classic, Faster, Pussycat, Kill, Kill.
Did you see that? That was too easy.
Monday, June 5th.
They're murderers! She kills them with her bare hands!
Kill faster, pussycat! 11 p.m. on the Ubu Hour!
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly business.